In post-war Japan, 13-year-old Noboru witnesses something transformative through a secret peephole in his bedroom wall. His widowed mother, Fusako, in an intimate encounter with Ryuji, a merchant sailor. Rather than feeling disturbed, Noboru experiences a profound awakening. The moonlight, the sea wind, and these human forms create what he perceives as a perfect cosmic order, an ineluctable circle of life connecting everything. Any disruption to this harmony would signal the end of the world, he whispers to himself, unknowingly foreshadowing the tragedy to come. This moment captures the novel's central tension between youthful idealism and crushing disillusionment, between cosmic meaning and existential emptiness. Noboru's limited viewpoint, peering through a tiny hole, symbolizes his partial understanding of adult reality. He glimpses fragments of truth but lacks context, filling gaps with his developing worldview. This innocent yet portentous observation establishes the philosophical conflict that will ultimately determine Ryuji's fate. What makes Yukio Mishima's slim novel so devastating is its unflinching portrayal of adolescent nihilism colliding with adult compromise. Like the sea itself, beautiful yet merciless, the story pulls us into depths where romantic ideals crash against cold reality, where the search for meaning leads to unspeakable cruelty. Ryuji Tsusikazi chose seafaring from antipathy to land rather than love of the ocean. His life revolves around a quest for glory, a glittering, special order kind no ordinary man would be permitted. Yet years at sea have tempered these dreams, leaving him yearning for something unnamed. Behind his tough exterior, Ryuji secretly enjoys sentimental songs and romantic fantasies. His dream of a grand love ending in death merges with images of tidal waves. When meeting Fusako, he recognizes her from this dream but lacks words to express it. Successive losses shaped his solitary nature. His mother died when he was young, followed by his sister to typhus and father to illness. This detachment made a sailor's transient life natural while feeding his romantic ideals. Without lasting relationships, his notions of love and glory grew to mythic proportions. When Ryuji contemplates abandoning the sea for Fusako, he confronts a profound question. Can domestic happiness replace his dreams of glory? This conflict drives the unfolding tragedy. Fusako Kuroda lives in meticulous order. As proprietor of Rex Limited, an upscale shop in Yokohama's Motomachi district, she sells exceptional imported menswear that attracts wealthy foreigners and Tokyo dandies from her Moorish-style building. Since her husband's death, Fusako has managed the business successfully through family connections and European buying trips. This professional competence extends to her personal life. She maintains a well-ordered household and locks her son in his room nightly. When Ryuji enters her structured world, he represents both disruption and possibility. Their initial meeting during a ship tour unsettles her, yet his directness compels her to invite him to dinner. Their evening walks reveal how starved for connection Fusako has been. When she invites him to stay the night, wearing a black lace kimono over crimson, she steps away from widowhood's safety. As their relationship deepens, Fusako's practical nature reasserts itself. She investigates his background and considers incorporating him into her business, ensuring even love finds its proper place in her carefully arranged life. Among the novel's most disturbing elements is the gang of 13-year-old boys led by the Chief, an adolescent philosopher king whose followers unite in rejecting adult values. Their worldview blends nihilism, existentialism, and rebellion, made chilling by their methodical application. The Chief dismisses Noboru's romantic notions about the sea as merely permissible, refusing to acknowledge inherent meaning. He views the adult world as illusory, hypocritical, and sentimental, and considers it his mission to strip away these comforting falsehoods. Unlike typical teenage rebellion, the Chief's approach is coldly intellectual. He has desensitized his followers through clinical demonstrations of sexuality and violence. When Naboro expresses excitement about Ruji's sea stories, the chief dismisses them as mere entertainment. The group's matchless inhumanity culminates in killing and dissecting a kitten with clinical detachment. Examining its corpse, they feel power rather than guilt. Naboro feels like a giant of a man, concluding, "I can do anything, no matter how awful." This intellectual framework transforms cruelty into supposed scientific inquiry, ultimately justifying the novel's climactic violence. Naboru's admiration for Ruji as an authentic hero transforms painfully as the sailor abandons the sea for domestic life. This disillusionment forms the emotional core of the novel, showing how idealization can turn to contempt when reality disappoints. Initially, Ruji's tales of storm billows, Haitian trees, and Persian Gulf sunsets captivate Naboru, embodying everything the boy values: adventure, authenticity, and freedom from convention. This idealization shatters when the Rakuyo sails without Ruji. Naboro treasured that green drop of maritime essence, the sea representing an alternative to stifling domestic order. As Ruji settles ashore, each change feels like betrayal. Reading novels instead of living adventures, wearing suits instead of sailor's clothes. Most devastating is how Ruji's storytelling becomes hollow. The final blow comes when Ruji assumes a fatherly role after discovering Naboro's peephole. When Ruji calls him son, Naboro feels himself being pulled into the tepid, formless world he dreaded most. The seashore tension forms the novel's fundamental symbolic landscape. The sea represents freedom, mystery, and heroic possibility, while the shore embodies convention, security, and compromise. Ruji's relationship with the sea defines him. Though he chose seafaring from antipathy to land, it became the backdrop for his existential yearnings. When he abandons maritime life for Fusako, he sacrifices not just a profession, but an entire symbolic universe, trading vast horizons for confined certainties. For Naboru, the sea represents everything his structured existence lacks. He values Ruji's green drop of maritime connection. Ruji's abandonment feels like betrayal of a cosmic principle. The shore, epitomized by Fusako's luxury shop, represents the ordered world both characters resist. Ruji's exchange of sailor's clothes for tailored suits transforms him from free agent to social participant. Between these poles lies the harbor, a transitional space where sea and shore meet, hosting both opening and closing scenes. The novel climaxes on an isolated hilltop overlooking the sea, a liminal space symbolizing Ruji caught between worlds and post-war Japan between tradition and Western influence. In their dry dock cave where they repair rundown ships, the boys position themselves as judges of authenticity, determining Ruji's fate. The clearing becomes a tribunal where the sailor faces judgment for abandoning maritime glory for domesticity. Ruji's attempts to entertain the boys only highlight his diminished status. As he shares tales while gazing at a distant ship, he's overcome with regret for abandoning the immensity of the sea and glory merged in death. This recognition that choosing Fusako cost him a heroic death represents a spiritual death preceding his physical one. When he drinks the poison tea thinking, "Glory, as anyone knows, is bitter stuff," the metaphor becomes literal. The killing serves a philosophical purpose, preserving heroic authenticity against adult compromise. Mishima thus reveals the terrible price of absolute idealism, where purity of purpose outweighs human connection.